Swan Fergus Shiel, I've just conducted the first performance of Tristan and Isolde in Ireland in 50 years. So it's been an amazing reaction from the audience, amazing performance from the singers, from the orchestra. It's really been an incredible journey from when I first thought of the idea of doing Tristan, like in January, I think it was, in my study at home. I just sort of had a light bulb moment, let's do Tristan. And here we are, 9 months later. It's amazing what can be done when you put the right people together.
Fergus Shiel's idea was an audacious one. Not just to stage one of the most demanding opera works, Wagner's Tristan and Isolde, but to make it the maiden production for a new opera company, Wide Open Opera. The idea was prompted by the Arts Council's call for applications for production awards. The demise of the National Irish Opera Company, the year before, had left a void in Irish opera, and this award scheme opened the door for new players to pitch their ideas. Fergus decided to think big, and his €600,000 application for Tristan won out. It's September the 3rd, and Fergus is in his first rehearsal with his chosen Isolde, the Kerry-born soprano Miriam Murphy, who is performing the role for the first time. It's just 4 weeks to opening night. I'm Michael Gallen, and in this documentary, I follow that journey from rehearsals to final curtain, from the birth of a new opera company to a unique night in Irish music.
I suppose the jewel in the crown and part of the raison d'etre of the entire production is Miriam Murphy. And Miriam is an incredible soprano. I've worked with her a number of times. We've known each other since we were teenagers. And she is just one of these voices that once you hear, you'll never forget.
I'm very excited to be singing Isolde in Ireland for the first time. Obviously the Irish princess, and Wagner must have known that the Irish never shut up, so she sings a lot. It's the Mount Everest of the soprano repertoire, so it's going to be interesting to learn how to pace myself through it. And I think Fergus is a great conductor to do that with, because he's a great singing conductor. He understands singers, and he understands you need space in this music, because it's a tough sing.
The reason that Tristan is such an interesting project to do really starts with the music itself. And my primary objective was to put on performances of Wagner's Tristan and Isolde in Dublin for audiences to hear. How am I going to do that was the next question. And one of the ways that seemed feasible in the incredibly short window of opportunity that we had to put it all together was to take an existing production that I know is excellent, which I sourced from Welsh National Opera. And we're taking this production, their sets, costumes, designs, concept, but we're populating it with a team of people from Ireland. So our entire orchestra is the RTÉ National Symphony Orchestra. Our chorus we've put together especially. Our team of soloists includes 6 Irish singers and 3 international artists. So it is a big new Irish statement about developing the capacity of the opera sector. And who's had the nerve to put on something this big for a long, long time in Ireland?
An opportunity came about at the end of last year, 2011, when the National Irish Opera, it was obvious that it wasn't going to proceed. The Arts Council had a consultation process for a while, and then just before Christmas last year announced that they would be offering funding for opera projects in 2012. My name is Gavin O'Sullivan, and I'm executive producer with Wide Open Opera. Fergus had some idea that this might happen, and I'd always wanted to do Tristan and Isolde. His first approach to me was that he felt it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The whole opera landscape was going to be changing, and that there might be an opportunity to pitch this and see what happens.
I don't know what type of proposals they were expecting. I would imagine they probably weren't expecting Wagner's Tristan and Isolde from a startup company. But I think some ideas are so good that they just attract a lot of attention.
I'm John O'Kane. I work for the Arts Council. My job title is Arts Director. Well, I think the thing about Wide Open Opera is that they have come to the Arts Council in response to a call for applications. And Wide Open Opera and Tristan and Isolde is one of a number of initiatives the Council has responded to within that context. Obviously, you know, the Council is very committed and was very excited by the sheer artistic ambition behind it and the fact that it, at its heart, it's about creating a context for Irish audiences to engage with one of the masterpieces of German 19th century opera. So it's a great idea.
Rosemary Collier used to lead Arts Council policy on music and opera. Today she's the director of the Kilkenny Arts Festival, and she's also joined the board of Wide Open Opera.
I think Fergus is an incredibly ambitious individual, and I really like his chutzpah. And he's really applied himself for years and has been terribly committed to making opera happen in different ways. So certainly when Fergus and the company asked me to join the board, I had no hesitation in saying yes, that I would love to be a part of that. I think there's probably a very exciting journey to be played out here now with Wide Open Opera.
I'm Imelda Drum and I'm singing the role of Brangaena in Tristan. It's a very exciting day, it's our first day. And we are nearly finished, nearly through the first and second act and nearly finished the third act. It's all very exciting, very exciting. I play the confidant to Isolde. She's not quite a maid, but she plays a subservient role. But she's very much the confidant and friend and really loves Isolde. This is my first time doing a fully staged performance of a Wagnerian opera, and I'm really looking forward to it. This is huge. It takes an awful lot to put on any Wagnerian opera. For us here in Ireland, it's so special to be able to stage something like this, and we have to be very grateful to the Arts Council for giving us funding.
So for Tristan and Isolde, there's a lot that's taken place before the curtain even opens. First of all, Isolde, who's Irish, she's from Chapel Isard. I'm not sure if she's from Chapel Isard, but Shapel Isolde is named after her. She is an Irish princess. She has a very powerful mother who's given her lots of spells and potions and ways of controlling the world and controlling the men around her. And she's a type of sorceress as well as a princess.
My name is Miriam Murphy and I'm singing Isolde. Well, Isolde is the heroine, she's the Irish princess, and we first meet her and she's not in a very good mood because she has been betrayed by Tristan, whom she healed, but he then betrayed her and he's sailing her off to King Mark in Cornwall, and she decides that there's no way she's going to go to Cornwall, so she calls Tristan to her and has decided that both of them are going to drink the potion of death. But her less than faithful servant, Brangaena, has swapped the potion. So they drink the love potion and the rest, they say, is history.
As they land, as the king boards the boat, they're kind of in a complete trance, passionately in love with one another. Now, some people think that this was to do with the love potion. Other people think they were in love already.
They often say that Tristan and Isolde is the greatest love story in opera, and in some ways that's true. I mean, it really is a five-hour piece or so about love, and it really explores all of the emotions, the passions that involve with love, the hatred, the resentment, the jealousy. My name is Brett Polligato, and I'm singing the role of Corvinal, who is basically Tristan's companion. with a piece like Tristan, there are so many challenges. First of all, just the sheer length of it. So just in terms of stamina, it's a very difficult endeavor. When you add to that, that it's probably Wagner's most chromatic work. And rhythmically also, it's quite tricky. Just memorizing something that complex is hard. And then, of course, there's the singing. It's a huge orchestra. And just the physical effort required to send your voice over an orchestra of that size takes a lot of concentration.
It isn't by force of coincidence that the themes of ecstatic desire, betrayal, and death dominate this opera. At the time of writing Tristan in the late 1850s, Richard Wagner was in political exile, and he and his family were being housed in Zurich by a wealthy patron, Otto Wesendonck. Wagner and Wesendonck's wife, Matilda, became deeply entwined. The roots of the famous love duet at the end of Act Two come from a piece written for Matilda.
When Wagner was writing Tristan, he was in the middle of writing his bigger Ring cycle. The entire Ring cycle took him 12 years to complete. He took a few years off in the middle to write Tristan. Really, it comes from a period when he was at the height of his powers. Some people will talk to you for hours on end about the Tristan chord, which is like a diminished chord, but not quite, which sounds unresolved. Right at the beginning, right the very first few notes, he introduces this chord which immediately unsettles you, and you're waiting for the chord to go somewhere and then it goes somewhere else. It's like this one long sort of spiral of music that unfolds and never quite comes to rest until the very end. I can't remember who it was said that Wagner had beautiful moments and really boring quarter hours. I totally reject that, certainly in the case of Tristan. Every moment in the opera, right from beginning to end, has a direction and a flow, and the music just carries you along. And along the way, it's had some of the most ravishingly beautiful love music. Techniques that later on Hollywood composers copied, these were all invented by Wagner at the time he was writing Tristan.
It was no less than Bernard Herrmann who borrowed from the Tristan prelude in his love theme for Hitchcock's Vertigo. And in turn, Herrmann's theme has now been revisited in the movie The Artist.
We're now on day three of rehearsals. Most of the cast arrived on Sunday. They had a music rehearsal on Monday with Fergus the conductor. They basically sang through the whole opera, the four principals. And then yesterday was the first day of production, and that was with the director, Peter Watson. On Monday, they had laid out the rehearsal venue. They marked out the floor roughly to coincide with what it'll be like on the main stage. And yesterday they started rehearsing movement around the stage and interaction and things like that.
It's my first time to put together such a large project involving hundreds of people, and you do have sleepless nights worrying about will everything slot into place exactly the way you planned. So far so good, touch wood. We have it all pretty much worked out. Now, there's a little bit of flexibility in it, but we know where we want to be by the end of week one, by the end of week two, etc. And we have certain key milestones. Today's meeting the chorus was an important milestone. On Friday, I have my first day with the orchestra. Well, putting the chorus together is quite tricky because there isn't a full-time opera chorus here in the way that there is in other European countries. And there is a chamber choir, but that's a slightly different type of singing. Here you need real strong operatic voices who can sing a Wagner score, who can cut through over a large symphony orchestra. Had some auditions, but largely we recruited them from people who I know, who I've worked with over years, and we took recommendations from different people and met up, and it was a kind of an organic process, and bit by bit we got everybody together. But it's just 20 singers, it's all men, there's no female chorus in this opera. Excellent, thank you. Let's go on then. What's the next thing? More Hohays, isn't it?
Miriam Murphy's Isolde and Imelda Drum's Brangæna are the only female roles in this opera. Their high notes standing out among a chorus of soldiers and sailors. Tristan, played by Lars Klaveman, is aided by Canadian baritone Brett Poligatto as Corvinal, and Manfred Hemm from Switzerland plays the betrayed King Mark. The other major roles are all played by Irish singers, with Eugene Ginty playing Melot, Owen Gilhooly as Hurt, Gavin Ring as a steersman, and Eamon Mulhall beginning the opera with the sailor's song. Here's Lars on the challenge of taking on Tristan.
You have to study the text. There are tons of text. I mean, Tristan is one of the biggest tenor parts there is at all in the entire repertoire. So you have to study and restudy and learn and relearn over and over again.
Where it sounds wrong.
Yeah.
Very often, especially in later works.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Here we have a very short period of rehearsals before the actual performances. I try to sing a lot in the beginning when we are putting things on stage the way they are thought to be, so I can take it easier later on, so I don't go into the opening night being tired. So now I'm really trying to sing myself into this production and also find my own limits, where are they today, and so on.
Fergus's opening session with the orchestra is significant. The score finally comes to life, but he also has to take command.
Can take part in this. Monday and Tuesday this week I had orchestra rehearsals in the National Concert Hall with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra. It was just an amazing experience because you study this music and you look at all the notes on the page and then it just comes to life, and it comes to life in so many wonderful ways. In my mind I have a complete picture of how I want it to sound, and then something else happens. It's like an extra dimension that is beyond imaginable in many ways.
The games do the same, and then it's everyone.
In such incredible ways, you hear things surging forward from the cellos or from the horns or wherever it is in the orchestra. And that's incredibly exciting because you have this unbelievable spectrum of sound coming at you from all angles.
Seamus Crimmins, Executive Director of the RTE Performing Groups. When I heard about it, I thought I'd love to be part of that. In the same way as Lyric Opera has an association with the RTE Concert Orchestra. So these are very good people. These are leaders in their field. They're being very brave, and I want to partner them. I'm looking forward to this production. I'm dying to hear Miriam in it. And I'm dying to hear the orchestra in it, because actually the RTE National Symphony Orchestra has had huge experience in the pit in the past, in Wexford and with Opera Ireland, but less so of late. I I know they're limbering up, you know, the players are, they're thinking about stamina already because it just requires so much physicality as well as musicality.
The upper part, isn't that right? So just keep it sung out. Just that little phrase, violas and cellos together. Piano, two, three.
The whole sheer improbability of it all coming together, that's part of the fun of opera as well. Realistically, it shouldn't happen, but it does, because you've got brilliant people to pull all the separate strands together.
It's difficult as a conductor to come into an orchestra and just immediately get them to play exactly what you have in your head, but I suppose that's what years of training are for. When you're trained to be a conductor, really what you're training to do is to influence other people, because you don't make any noise or any sound yourself. All you can do is influence, and the only way you can influence is by the use of your arms, by the use of your body.
A couple of G, please. A couple of G.
Each act in the opera is about an hour and 20 minutes long. A typical symphony concert, if you take the interval and everything, probably isn't much more than an hour and 20 minutes of music, you know, maybe an hour and 30. So it's almost like preparing three different symphony concerts at the same time. Obviously, they're an extremely brilliant orchestra, fantastic musicians. They've no problem playing it, but it's just actually mentally getting your head around all that much music all at the same time and being able to just draw on it straight away at the click of a switch, that you're there and you're in the mood and in the zone. That's an incredible challenge. It's a challenge for every orchestra and every conductor, but it's something we've been grappling with over the last few days.
And it's the middle of the night. Hang on. She's married to the king. Get my facts right. It's weird, but it's not that weird.
There's no denying that this is a huge project for him. This is probably the biggest thing he's ever done in his career. I'm guessing that. I know he's worked a lot with lyric opera in the past, but in terms of scale, I mean, this is really, really big. So he has huge demands on him, because the conductor is really the navigator for the opera. The conductor shapes the performance, drives the performance, is the key person every night that you're on the podium.
There's so much music, you can't stop and fix everything verbally or tell somebody, could you play a bit louder, could you play a bit softer there, could you do something in a different way. You don't have time to do thousands and thousands and thousands of bars in this piece that go flying by. So much of that has to be done by your physical gestures. I find with different orchestras respond in different ways. I've done a number of different projects with the RT National Symphony Orchestra before. I know a lot of the players very well individually. I've worked with them in so many different contexts. So I feel at home, I feel at ease with them.
The different string sections can play the da-da-da-da-da tune. Just lean a little bit into the semi.
The task of realising a work of this scale is a huge one for both performers and conductor. Tristan has become infamous for its cancellations and deaths. Two conductors have died while conducting it. Many have found not just the physical, but the emotional weight of the piece too much. Here's Brett Poligatto, Seamus Crimmins, and Fergus Scheele on the role of the conductor.
I have a tremendous respect for conductors of Wagner, and especially this piece. How they ever grasp the form of it and the structure is beyond me. It's just such an overwhelmingly huge work. And then, of course, once they have that structure in their own heads, they have to find a way to make everyone understand what they're thinking, and that includes the singers too, who have other things to contend with apart from watching the conductor whenever they can. So it's really a monumental feat for the conductor.
Brett, can we just do the last few bars again, because I'm going to get faster from a little bit before where it's written.
Okay.
From Ein Treuer Mann.
That's the key person, to actually make this thing live, bring all the components together. So there's a huge responsibility. I have only conducted quite modest operas by comparison. You know, there's something in the energy, or there's something in the chemistry, or there's something that you, indescribable that's going on in that whole live experience, which means you've got to react and be proactive to ensure that you're getting the result that everyone has rehearsed for.
I think when you're conducting it, there's so many things that have to happen. There's the element of being a traffic policeman, making sure everybody comes in and out and starts and stops at the right time. That's sort of, if you like, your undercoat of what you're doing.
This overmast, the other one was untermast. This overmast, put that T on the downbeat. Don't do that tied over. Great.
I need to learn all the text. I need to understand the German. I need to be able to sing all the lines that all the singers can sing. I need to look at the orchestral parts and make sure I know exactly what each instrument is supposed to play, how they're supposed to play it. My score is 650 pages long, so it's a big undertaking in terms of time. When you've done that, then you need to step away a little bit. And I found that sometimes I would sort of do things like put together a huge big sheet of paper 12 feet long and sort of draw a picture of the emotional contours of the piece, you know, listen to the emotional shape of it, because sometimes you get bogged down in the details of the score and you can miss the wood from the trees in a way. You get so concerned about details that you're not seeing the big picture. So yeah, it's tricky on so many levels. So I find that I don't have much time to get too emotionally involved in the story myself, but moments catch me. Suddenly I hear something that's so exquisitely beautiful that I would get overcome emotionally for a few moments. Bestowed at the end, where Miriam sings that, it's very hard not to be moved by that. But I have to remain generally pretty cool and calm and collected and somewhat sort of calculated and know exactly what I'm going to do, because it's such a huge responsibility. If anything went wrong and one slip up from me, and everything could go wrong.
We've reached the midpoint, and the cast, now in familiar terms with each other, seem to be living and breathing the piece. Here's Imelda and Miriam.
This is our third week. We've had a lot of laughs and things that have caused great amusement, and it's just been really, really lovely. For me, it involves me travelling in on the Dart every morning, and sometimes I'm very late going home in the evening, but it's well worth it.
Well, we've staged all the acts now, so we're going back and doing some fine detail. I think we've done tremendously well to get as far as we have so quickly, but we have a dedicated team, really nice colleagues, so it's been a very nice experience.
This is a completely new role for me, and it's in German, but we've got English supertitles, so nobody's going to miss any of the conversation. It was quite a steep learning curve, because Wagner isn't like anything else that you will ever sing. It's very broad strokes, vocally and musically, and so it took quite a while to get used to.
It's a tough sing, and when you combine that with the physicality of the production, and then you have to factor in the big orchestra, I think all the challenges are as I expected. I mean, I'll only truly know once we get into the theatre and we know the acoustic and also get with the orchestra what we can and can't do on stage, because you can't be at the back of the stage if you can't be heard. So a lot of things may well have to be restaged, but we'll discover that next week, I guess. For this also, we have a very short rehearsal period, because in a big house, normally with Tristan, you would have at least 6 to 8 weeks rehearsal period. And I do believe you need that kind of rehearsal period, especially with a new production.
I mean, in Ireland, we don't get the luxury of having 4 weeks very often. When I've worked with other companies in Ireland, it's been a lot more condensed. But with something like Wagner, you cannot but give it the full 4 weeks. And it's really lovely. I mean, you get to know your colleagues very, very well. We came in on day one for a music call. We sang through the whole opera. And then we started floor rehearsals. And we've had a lot of fun.
I mean, if you're doing the role, then you learn all the notes and the language. You have language coaching. And I was lucky enough to work with Linda S. Gray, who's one of the most famous previous generation of Isoldas. So you do as much preparation as you can before you come into the studio. I guess, you know, it's just you go off the booth and you eat healthily and you try and sleep as much as you can. And obviously, I've been preparing the role for quite a few months now, trying to sing it in, and just trying to look after yourself, which is very difficult when you are in a rehearsal period like this with a role this size. You get tired quite quickly. So it's trying to balance how much you give on stage with actually knowing what your limit is. I'm always nervous before a production and before I go on stage. Once I'm on stage, the nerves disappear then, because you're doing it. It's an unstoppable force.
The creation of Wide Open Opera came at a time of crisis in the sector. The National Irish Opera Company had collapsed due to lack of funding, and Opera Ireland had already been wound down. For some, this presents both a challenge and an opportunity. I asked Andrew Sinnott, assistant conductor on Tristan, for his thoughts.
It's an interesting time at the moment in Irish opera provision, I suppose, because with the demise of Opera Ireland, it has left a kind of a, I'm not going to say a void, but that's the wrong word, it's left a space, and this space is being filled by other projects. I think that's a great thing, that we're not shutting down shop, that things are still open and still possible, and I think that's one of the great advantages and almost side effects of this kind of transition period in Irish opera. I think in that sense, Wide Open Opera is, well, it's doing a few things. It's providing a very large-scale opera, but it's also giving us a vista into a possible future, which I think is kind of a wonderful vision, and let's hope that it can find some fruition in the years to come.
Well, opera in Ireland, for a start, there's been very little of it. We've had some fantastic singers coming from Ireland, but we haven't had that sort of level of real creativity and invention and excitement in terms of the performers, the companies that have delivered opera. And I suppose now is an opportunity, since there was a gap in the market, there was no main opera company in Dublin. I've founded Wide Open Opera in order to try and really approach opera in a totally different way. So yes, our first production is an opera in a theatre, but we don't want to see opera as just being something that takes place in a theatre given by people who are formidable performers. I mean, some of my past work has also involved projects like Shelter Me From the Rain in Carlow. This was an opera that had 100 singers in it, none of whom had ever sung in an opera before. So it was really opening up a new experience, but not as audience members, as actual performers on stage. So over the years ahead, what I'd like to try and achieve with Wide Open Opera is a really inventive, creative, different range of operas, and that operas can take place
anywhere that people might gather, and we want to put opera on there so that opera, in a sense, goes out to meet people rather than people having to venture forward into a theatre to find opera.
Here's Rosemary Collier.
I do see real possibilities in terms of wide open opera, the type of people they work with, the type of experiences they have, the type of capacity they have to make a concerted effort in relation to that holistic work that needs to be done around opera as an art form. I think wide open opera has a potential as a company that maybe other entities wouldn't have, because there are certain characters involved there in relation to cultivating a crop of people who will make opera and can make opera here that maybe otherwise wouldn't have done. So I see Wide Open Opera maybe having a real role in terms of that strategic picture in relation to a national opera company.
How do the other players on the scene react to the founding and funding of Wide Open Opera?
I'm Virginia Kerr and I am chairperson of Opera Theatre Company. Well, I'm delighted to see any company that can give more opera, anything that can bring more opera into the country, and also can give Irish singers and Irish repetitors and Irish musicians and stage directors and everybody, all opera practitioners, a chance to work and to work at home and be seen at home and their work to be seen at home, and making opera more accessible. The more opera, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And I think for many, many years, everybody was kind of frightened of, you know, if they get money, then we won't get money and everything. You have to go out and be open and prove that you're worthy of the money that you get, that you're giving value for money. And open up with other people as well. Why not?
I'm Niall Doyle. I was chief executive of Opera Ireland for 4 years in the period leading up to the wind-up of Opera Ireland. Well, I think that kind of vision is a great vision for it. I think it's a great idea. That's in some ways the kind of vision that was behind the original Irish National Opera idea, that this would be a single company making opera for the entire country on all scales, from the big, fairly static ones in the large, say, a Grand Canal Theatre or whatever, to the small-scale one, a la Opera Theatre Company. And the combination of OI and OTC illustrated that concept of INO. So I think that was always a good idea. INO was a good idea. WOO being conceived along those lines is still a good idea, but it sits beside OTC, which is also making smaller scale opera. So I think it's a great concept, and would wish Fergus and Gavin and all everybody involved with it, wish them very well with it.
My name is Michael Barker-Caven. I'm the artistic director of the Everyman Theatre in Cork. And this summer, myself and John O'Brien co-directed a production of Pagliacci. I think we need to take ownership of opera and say that opera is for everyone. So I think we need to look at ourselves very carefully about our own choices of how we frame opera and how we reach out to our audience.
So what about that dream of a national company? Does it remain the key to the future of opera in Ireland? That's what I asked Michael and Rosemary.
The Project Award is a tremendous initiative. It creates opportunity, it creates a new environment, but I don't think that it's a long-term strategy for the growth of opera in the country. We do need, I think, a national company. And whether that national company is in a fixed building, in a fixed place, is the issue. For me, I think it should be more a concept. It should be more an aspirational idea, a national company that can appear in any guise, in any shape and form, in any part of the country. And I think it needs to be national. There is no point having a national company that only performs in Dublin.
In breaking the mould a bit, we kind of need to see what might emerge. And I think that's really interesting for me as somebody who works in the sector, but also, I suppose, for audiences, just to see what does emerge and what can be made. And lots of really interesting ideas and really interesting characters coming forward. And of course, we never really found our feet in terms of what it is to make Irish opera. And I don't mean Irish repertoire, I mean opera that is made in Ireland. What is it about opera that's made in Ireland? And I don't mean by Irish people, I just mean made in Ireland. And I suppose that's something that a national opera company would have a strong role in doing. But also I think there are opportunities for us to maybe see what individuals, and when Irish individuals or people based in Ireland as individuals make work, what does that look like? And I suppose therein there are comparisons with theatre making. We make theatre repertoire here that is made in America and is made in Australia, but what is it about Irish theatre making that is revered the world over in terms of the way we direct, the way we act? There's a similar kind of scenario, I suppose, in relation to opera.
For the singers, the big issue is getting and keeping work at home. Here's Imelda Drum.
Last year there was very little opera happening, certainly very little Indigenous opera happening in Ireland, except maybe for Wexford. And you can't earn a living in opera unless there are productions being put on. It was just unfortunate that funding from the Arts Council was stalled a bit because of the uncertainty over the creation of an Irish national opera. I hope at some stage we do get it. It's certainly not in the current economic climate, but I hope at some stage that we will eventually get our own full-time opera company here. We have to show everybody that we are capable of putting on opera to very, very high standards here. I mean, we can buy in productions from Scottish Opera, but they're not employing Irish singers. They're not employing Irish orchestras. They're bringing their own crew with them all the time. If we are to create jobs in Ireland, we need a company or companies here that are going to employ the orchestra here, the crew here, the stage, the lighting, the wigs, everything that goes with an opera. It has the potential to create a huge amount of jobs here in Ireland, but only if it's properly funded. And at the moment, we just don't have that.
In the fourth and final week, the troops assemble in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre for the dress rehearsal. For Fergus and the performers, it's time to bring their hard work to fruition.
Just in terms of us starting and the performances also, the procedure will be this. I'm going to be preset with you. I'm not doing a sort of... Today we've just completed our dress rehearsal, so it's our final point in all our preparations. We have a day off tomorrow, and then our opening night is the following day, Sunday.
We'll come up again, and that'll be our cue to start playing. So we'll start playing out of the sort of the depths of darkness.
Really, from where we are now, there's very little scope for changing anything or making any slight little amendments here and there. A tiny little bit, I can still go around and talk to singers before the first performance, but basically we're 99% done in terms of our preparation, so it's in the bag now, whatever that's going to be like.
Your priorities are
outside. No, you should have been top of my priority list.
I'm sorry about that, I know what I did wrong. You knew I wasn't going to sing out of
it. Yeah, absolutely.
I tried to sing as much of the lower stuff.
Yeah, sing whatever you...
So I went wrong with the...
It's funny because psychologically in rehearsals, what I need to do is I need to drive things forward, drive the orchestra, put pressure on people to be concentrating, to be in the right place at the right time, make sure the singers are in the right place, you know, be really on top of people, constructively criticising, fixing any problems that exist. And then there comes a point, and today was the first point, where in a way I just mentally relax and let the music happen a little bit. You know, you still need to be like in charge and driving it and everything, but at the same time you want to hand over some of the responsibility to the orchestra and to the performers, because obviously the conductor doesn't make any noise, the conductor doesn't sing, the conductor doesn't play an instrument, all those other people do it. You kind of shape it, but you need to allow them contribute and make their own decisions and things like that. So that's what, you know, today was a little bit of a turning point in terms of handing over to others.
And is there okay contact? Am I giving you enough what you need?
You are, yeah.
Mr. Sinnott and gentlemen of the chorus standing by. That's Mr. Sinnott and gentlemen of the chorus standing by.
I'm Andrew Sinnott, and my job here is assistant conductor and chorus master.
It doesn't, not to get too soft too quick.
What's most challenging for me is the sheer scale of it, that you kind of get lost. Things like tempi and dynamics, they get lost in the enormity of the piece. So when you kind of land at a moment and somebody is requiring a clear tempo and a clear dynamic indication from you, you really have to be on the ball, concentrating to make sure that the right thing comes out, you know. So it's challenging in that regard.
So just to clarify that I'm given a 4-3-2-1, but then there's a half an empty bar after that.
On the other hand, because of the scale of it, it is unlike any other thing that an Irish musician tends to get to do. In that way, it's a privilege to be working on it. Because Wagner operas don't come around every day, you know, and so somebody like me who's been involved in opera for 20 years or thereabouts, it has been kind of almost like a hole in the repertoire, in the sense that I would never get access to working on a piece like this, of this scale. And so for me, it's a fantastic experience. And it takes me well out of my comfort zone, which of course is important in order to keep vibrant and try to stay as alert as possible.
Luckily in the dress rehearsal tonight, I don't think I made any mistakes, which is nice to be able to say you've got through 5 hours without doing anything that caused anybody to go wrong. I can still improve on what I'm doing. I mean, some people have said it's an opera for young men. I think it's universal. And I think what's wonderful, actually, about seeing the opera is often you have singers who are in the story, maybe Tristan and Isolde are teenagers or in their 20s, and nobody in their 20s could sing this. So inevitably you get opera singers who are in their 40s or 50s, or 30s, and Miriam Murphy's still in her 30s. In a way, like, I look at it as this sort of last chance of love or something, you know, that it's a love story that does unfold at a sort of a mature age. And yet, as you get older, I'm in my 40s myself, you don't want those sort of passions to sort of run out in life. You still want to be passionate about things and passionate about people. So, you know, I think there is something sort of wonderful about this story, that it appeals to people of all ages.
Opening night and the atmosphere is electric. A last-minute boom in ticket sales has the theatre thronged with the dedicated and the curious.
Performance of Tristan and Isolde will commence in 20 minutes. The auditorium doors are now open.
But anybody who's interested in music at all has to make pilgrimage, if not to Bayreuth, has to make it to Dublin. I mean, it's 50 years, I think, since it was last performed. We are from Kerry, so we're immensely proud of Miriam Murphy, who is singing Isolde. It's such a magnificent and historic occasion.
I came to see the opera because I think it's fantastic that there's a new opera company in Ireland, and especially to perform such a high-profile work as Tristan and Isolde. So I think I wanted to come along and support them, first of all. And also, you don't get very many opportunities to see Wagner performed in Ireland, so that was the second reason.
I just read that this was a new opera company. I wasn't aware of that before we purchased the tickets, but I was just reading the flyer and I saw it was a new opera company. I guess as a starting company, this must be a pretty nerve-wracking evening, yes.
Hi there, folks. Good evening. Welcome to our theatre today. We have our programmes here at 5 euro.
Thanks.
That's wonderful. I hope you enjoy your night as well.
I'm a great Wagner fan. I love Wagner opera. And once I heard it was on here in the theatre, I was very much interested to coming and seeing it. It's a very brave thing to do, to perform this opera for a new company. I wish them every success, and I'm really looking forward to hearing it.
I'm a fan of Lyric, so I heard of it over the last few months. Yeah, had to see it because I haven't been to an opera before, and opera is something I've been remiss over my life. So, yeah, delighted now to get a chance to hear.
I'm not a real Wagnerian. My friend here is much more into Wagner than I am. The reason that I particularly want to see this opera, we're both from Kerry, and Miriam Murphy is so fantastic. So that's really why I wanted to see it.
Ladies, gents, 5 minute call.
I was at a play before when I went to see King Lear. That was years ago. I'd be the closest I've come. And depending on if it's good or not, I suppose, obviously. If it's good, I definitely come back, yeah. It's a nice little setup here.
That's great, then, if there's more people at the box office. I finally realise it's on.
I suppose not everybody would be into Wagner's music. They might find it a bit heavy, but it's a shame, because not that I know an awful lot about it, but I do like it. And if they knew a little more about it, they probably would really enjoy the evening.
Mr. Shiel, make his way to the pit, please. That's Mr. Shiel to the pit.
One of my all-time favourite operas. I rank it alongside three other operas as my top favourite opera. Peter Grimes, The Marriage of Figaro, and would you believe it, Tosca. But no, honestly, Tristan is just a pinnacle of European culture.
30 seconds.
Well, it's a huge effort, obviously. Huge opera. I hope it all works out.
Maestro standing by.
I'm very keen on opera. I sort of travel all over the world to see things. And this is unusual that you have this in Dublin. I mean, it's very unusual, because it's the ultimate Wagner opera. Very difficult, very tricky.
Okay, here we go. Front of house, lights, out, go. Pit lights, go. Thank you. Thank you.
It's been absolutely brilliant. We've just come out of the second act. The set change has been magnificent. The lighting's great. The singing's really, really good. I love the fact that they're subtitled because I wouldn't have a clue what's going on otherwise.
Act 3 of Tristan and Isolde will continue in 3 minutes.
We both thought the performance of Tristan and Isolde by Wide Open Opera was absolutely fantastic. Miriam Murphy was outstanding as Isolde.
She was absolutely mind-blowing. It was really, really beautiful.
Fantastic wow. Performance.
It's kind of eye-opening and for something of this scale too. It's kind of a marathon as opposed to a sprint.
Wagner is most welcome in Dublin, isn't it, really?
Oh, absolutely, I agree. It was fantastic.
We'd be back in a heartbeat.
After performing Tristan 3 times in just a week, the singers are exhausted, but the mood is jubilant. I'm with Imelda, Miriam and Fergus.
First night curtains opens up and I am doing my best to swallow because I'm quite nervous. I just want to swallow just a beat before I sing and I go, maybe I won't take that swallow. And then I'm into it. And once it starts, and once you start, and once the voice is flowing well, you just relax and everything, that leaves you. But there is that sense of emotion and heebie-jeebies that you're launching into what is 4 hours of music. By the end of the evening, you're absolutely wreck tired. And then 2 days rest. First day you're exhausted and you don't really know what's wrong with you, and then the next day you're getting back to yourself, and then suddenly the day after you have to do it all again.
Well, I can't say it's easy, because normally you do Wagner and then you'd have at least 4 days off, minimum 3. So we've had 2 days off. So it's been tough. I mean, Lars, who is the Tristan, is a very experienced singer, and he said this is the toughest gig he's ever done. So it has been tough, but equally it's been rewarding to know that you can sing 3 Isoldes in a week and still have a voice at the end. So I must be doing something right.
It's been a wonderful 5 weeks, 3 great performances, 3 fabulous audiences on their feet each night, and we're all feeling very happy with ourselves, job well done, and very pleased that it's gone so well. Amazing that this is a new opera company in Ireland.
Well, it was amazing. I love how it's staged, that Liebestod at the end, the way the light goes down. And it, I think for the audience, it probably really draws them in. And just the feeling that this is my first Isolde, and I felt that I did a good job. So I felt a great sense of relief when the light went out, so to speak. I love the character, I love her journey, I love who she is, and I look forward to making a friend of her over the years to come.
I've bitten the bug. The bug's bitten me. I think that Brangaena has suited me more than I expected her to. Fantastic. I'll do it again tomorrow.
I'm sure if somebody came in, I'd be going,
Well, maybe next week.
Thank you.
I'm so pleased for Fergus because he was brave. I mean, to put on Tristan and Isolde is a huge undertaking for any opera company, but for a completely new opera company, it's slightly crazy, but he's calm, he's thorough, and he's a great person to work with. And for a new company, they know how to treat their artists. And I hope it'll only go on from here and that they will go from strength to strength because it's been a pleasure working with them.
Hopefully we'll have shown people what Irish artists are capable of, because I think there's always been a sense with opera that you needed to have somebody foreign running the show, or you needed to have somebody with an Italian name or a German name coming in. I think we've come of age, the Irish opera community, and tonight is evidence of that, I think.